Today on the Brian Lehrer Show, as Michael Brown is buried in Missouri today, we will open the phones for blacks and Latinos living in New York City suburbs. Could Ferguson happen here? And we'll talk to our Micropolis columnist, Arun Venugopal, about why Ferguson is a suburb like many others in the United States in the 21st century. Also today, did you hear that President Obama might ask Congress for official authorization to use military force against Islamic State in both Iraq and Syria? Not quite a declaration of war. Congress doesn't seem to do that anymore, despite what it says in the Constitution. But it would be the first force authorization at this level since just after September 11th in 2001. So listeners, if you were in Congress, how would you vote? We'll take your calls later this hour. And enough with all these pro-democracy protests around the world. China holds an anti-democracy protest in Hong Kong, and the turnout is huge. We will ask, who would attend an anti-democracy protest? But first, how about the state of democracy here in New York? Governor Cuomo is up for re-election. He's being investigated by the federal government for possibly interfering with a commission on corruption he appointed when they wanted to investigate his own campaign donors, for example. And he is so far refusing to debate either of his opponents, Fordham Law Professor Zephyr Teachout in the September 9th Democratic primary, or the Republican candidate in November, assuming Cuomo is renominated, that is Westchester County Executive Rob Astorino, that Republican candidate. So we are announcing today that here on the Brian Lehrer Show, Teachout and Astorino will debate each other next week. Now, this is their idea, but we like it enough to stage the debate. Obviously, the elephant in the room will be the Andrew Cuomo empty chair. While you were at the beach this weekend, my producer, Alana, was toiling away to arrange this debate, which is now set for next Thursday, September 4th, here on the show. So let's preview and explain what's going on with all of this with someone who knows more about New York State politics than any one person should be allowed to know, Ozzie Paberer, reporter and blogger for Capital New York. Hi, Ozzie. Welcome back to WNYC.
Thanks for having me.
And Ozzie, you might well ask, why did we agree to have this debate, which Cuomo's opponents requested as a publicity stunt for themselves? And if you were to ask that, I would be the first to say this is a publicity stunt for themselves as far as they're concerned. But also, I feel like my job as host of this show is to make sure that the important issues get discussed during election season and discussed in a way that voters will notice so more people are informed and might turn out to vote. So if Cuomo is refusing to debate in order to minimize public discussion, and if having Teachout and Astorino in a room together creates a little buzz around public discussion, I'm all for it. I will moderate that debate. And by the way, Rob and Zephyr, take note, I will ask them some pro-Cuomo questions. They don't get a free pass to bash him when there is his side of the story, too. But if the governor's not going to represent, and that's his campaign strategy, well, I'm in a different business than him, and I've got a different job to do. So will you cover it, Ozzie?
Absolutely. I'm glad to see that reporters are not letting politicians get in the way of a policy discussion. So anything that gets discussions related to the governor's race talked about is a good thing. And what's sort of fascinating is Cuomo 2014 is slightly reticent to debate, but Cuomo 2010 was a little bit more open to debate. In fact, the debate that he participated in when he was running for governor included everyone that was running that year, including Jimmy McMillan, who had the very famous phrase, "The rent is too damn high." And so there are times where a candidate will refuse to debate in order to suppress the discussion, and there's other times where they will open the door to everybody running, and you have this sort of chorus and cacophony of a show happening. So it's good to see that there's someone stepping in and bringing some attention to it.
And
in the
what
right way.
What you say about 2010 is an example of debate strategy. And I want to spend a couple of minutes talking about the strategy about whether to debate and who to debate with in various races. That debate you were describing had a number of challengers to Cuomo. So an incumbent or somebody who's leading in a race will usually try to avoid a one-on-one debate with a number two person because it makes that person look like they have equal stature, and rather try to debate against the number two person and the various minor candidates, because that makes it look like, you know, Andrew Cuomo and the Seven Dwarfs or something like that, and also tends to split whatever opposition vote arises as a result of the debate. So maybe that's what happened in 2010.
Right. And in that scenario, it's not the debate that really informs people, because there's this sort of this obligation to sort of mention everyone who appeared on the stage, and that takes up the precious minutes that TV reporters have. It takes up inches that newspaper reporters have. And what ends up happening is you have this one dominant figure who has a lot more money than everyone else, and they just flood the market. And you're right, everyone else looks like sort of these minor characters in the background.
And here is Governor Cuomo on New York One last week, not owning the decision himself of whether to participate in campaign debates.
I'll leave it to the campaigns to work out if there should be debates, who would participate. That's a campaign tactic that I will leave to the campaigns.
I will leave it to the campaigns to work out whether there will be a debate. So can you explain how the Cuomo campaign is separate from Cuomo?
Yes. When you don't want to take responsibility, it's the Cuomo campaign. And when you do want to take responsibility, I am the government. It's depending on what is most convenient for the person. Michael Bloomberg had used this tactic when he was running for a third term. He would tell reporters covering him at press conferences, you know, I don't want to answer that question. That's a campaign question. You should go to them. Well, the campaigns act in direct response to their candidates. So if you're asking the candidate and they refer the question to the campaign, that's
yes.
I mean, we all know exactly what that is.
The political definition of us and them. And
yes.
Listeners, we'll collect questions from you between now and next Thursday when we do this, or anything you want to say about the gubernatorial race. We'll get into the Moreland Commission here. Ozzie was also at the march on Staten Island over the weekend on Saturday, and we'll spend a few minutes on that before we go. But 212-433-WNYC. 433-9692. And I will say, Ozzie, that in the governor's defense, sort of, it's typical everywhere for candidates who are front runners by a lot to refuse to debate. Why give a little known or unpopular opponent a chance to stand side by side with you and look like you're equal? And that would certainly be the case here. Who but the already devoted political junkie ever heard of Zephyr Teachout, and who outside of Westchester and the Republican State Committee ever heard of Rob Astorino? So it's not like Cuomo is doing something at all unusual, right?
Correct. It is fair to say, what has Teachout done to deserve the attention of the public and reporters to debate these issues? It's a fair question to ask, and one that she has to answer. But the one thing going against Governor Cuomo is that he had explicitly said in 2009 to me, and he said it more recently when people have asked about the debate, he has said the Democratic Party is a party of primaries, and those produce debates that help shape policy in a way that's beneficial to everyone. Well, he said that when to me the first time in 2009 when he was considering running against then-Governor David Paterson, and speaking about the benefits of a primary at that time obviously suited him politically. Now, he still maintains that the Democratic Party is a party of primaries, except you have to follow rules and get on the ballot, something that he had tried to block Zephyr Teachout from in court. So so candidates discuss the virtues of campaigning in ways that are often beneficial to them at the ballot box.
And there are issues. Teachout, representing the more liberal Democrats, yep, can easily point out differences between Cuomo and many New Yorkers on the left. Astorino, as a Republican, certainly can, between himself and Cuomo on the right. So we'll have some fun, I think, hearing Teachout and Astorino really disagree with each other on what New York State needs. But where they will agree, I think, is that as far as they're concerned, Andrew Cuomo has an ethics problem, based on his relationship to his own Moreland Commission's ethics investigation. So tell us where that stands now, because I think that's where they're both going to come out swinging together. Tell me if you think I'm wrong. But is Cuomo officially under investigation by the U.S. Attorney's Office?
They have not announced specifically investigation and Cuomo is a target. They have not gone that far. What they have done is the U.S. Attorney in the Southern District of New York, Preet Bharara, has said that since the Moreland Commission closed abruptly and prematurely, that he has requested and received all of their documents and is going through what they had been investigating and stopped investigating. It has been publicly reported that some of those investigations went towards the direction of Governor Andrew Cuomo and his supporters. And there was a very well-reported Times piece that said a Cuomo aide told them to withdraw at least one of the subpoenas. The subpoena later went out. But the idea that a gubernatorial aide was directing who should get the subpoena and who should not is clearly a dangerous indicator about what is happening at that kind of commission. Now, the one thing that Teach Out and Astorino probably can point to as a problem for Cuomo are his public statements. He had said before that the Moreland Commission can investigate anyone, including himself. And then, in his 13-page response to the New York Times, he called it laughable that a commission he would appoint and help direct could then investigate himself. He said it wouldn't be credible to even do something like that. So he gave the public one very clear impression of what the Moreland Commission should be doing, and then he relied on a technical legal definition of who had made up the group in order to defend himself. The other thing that is kind of fascinating is, in response to coordinated statements made in defense of the Moreland Commission, Preet Bharara said that could be witness tampering, which is a very serious allegation.
Indeed.
And the immediate response from the second floor was to stop talking about this immediately.
The second floor being Cuomo's office.
Yes.
Ozzie Pabra, who knows where the second floor is in Albany and where a lot of the bodies are buried, probably, politics reporter for Capital New York, as we talk about the upcoming New York State primary on Tuesday, September 9th, and the so far refusal of Andrew Cuomo to debate his Democratic primary opponent, Zephyr Teachout. We will have Teachout and the Republican candidate for November, Rob Astorino, debating each other a week from Thursday here on the show, if you missed that announcement. And Ozzie, you mentioned Preet Bharara, the U.S. attorney. I was on vacation last week, and thanks to Anna Sale and Isaac Davey Aronson for a great job filling in. But often when I go away, as you may know, big news events tend to happen that people remember. And this time, I missed three pretty big things. The beheading of James Foley, who had been a guest on this show, how outrageous and horrible. And Isaac did a great tribute to James Foley segment here in my absence, and we'll talk about the U.S. response in our next segment. The unrest in Ferguson, which we will also get to today with Michael Brown's funeral taking place. And number three, a prosecutor in Texas indicted Governor Rick Perry there for stopping an investigation of public corruption. Now, I know that prosecution is being widely criticized as political rather than legal, but the parallel with Cuomo and Preet Bharara is eerily close, isn't it, at least potentially?
It is. Whenever there is a governor who is making waves like that and you have an independently appointed or independently elected prosecutor, there is always the potential that one is going to poke the other one. One is going to sort of wave the finger. And it's very easy to discredit an investigation into an elected official by calling it political, by calling it somehow motivated by something other than the facts of right and wrong. And yes, the Perry case is different than the Cuomo one, but what you have that is potentially dangerous is the idea that what the public will take away from it is somehow that you had done something close enough to the legal line that it drew scrutiny. And
I think you're exactly right, because once the indictment came in Texas, even if it's on legally shaky ground, even if it's a political witch hunt by that local prosecutor, which, you know, I think even a lot of sort of liberal newspaper editorial boards are saying it seems to be, after that indictment, everyone knew that Rick Perry was vetoing funds for a public corruption investigation when they may not have known before. And it might not be illegal to do that, but it shines a spotlight on the politics. So, you know, I wonder if there is a more solid legal footing Bharara could put himself on with, if not Cuomo, someone from his administration, and cause like a magnitude 6 earthquake in this election year.
It's very possible. I mean, he's already registered on the Richter scale by his public comments, by putting attention on the Moreland Commission. And one of the shocking things that I always learn again and again, and maybe one day I'll stop being surprised by it, it's not always what's illegal that is is shocking, but it's more often what is legal that someone is allowed to do that they cannot be prosecuted for, that is permissible by the by rules and statutes. What people can do in public office sometimes is very surprising. And if Preet Bharara cannot get cannot find a smoking gun per se, if he can put a spotlight on the legal behaviors of what some elected officials are doing, you can credit him with doing something good, even if he doesn't come out with a conviction.
But the Cuomo campaign can probably rightly rely on the public not getting their minds around that. I mean, maybe listeners to this show, but even 90% of our listeners who are not Albany politics junkies may not sort of get what this is about, or with the bigger issues in people's lives and, you know, public education and taxes and jobs about, well, Moreland Commission, I don't know.
Right. People live very busy lives, very complicated lives. And in the era where there are a lot of people who are fearful of government overreaching in terms of the IRS investigating political groups or the NSA, you know, peeking into people's iPhones and laptops, the idea that someone in the government is overzealous and over-prosecuting could probably be dismissed as just part of an overreaching government. So this could cut both ways, but once you get into a fight like this, both parties, it's a potential for both parties to come out looking bruised.
Have you seen any polls for the Democratic primary? I mean, if Cuomo doesn't inspire liberal passion and turnout for a primary would be very low anyway, and Teach Out has a couple of good hooks to run on and a certain passionate liberal base, is it necessarily, you know, the New York Yankees versus the Bayside Little League kind of blowout?
As a supporter of the Bayside Little League, I would like to say that they usually have a fighting chance. But
they're pretty good, I happen to know, in that Little League. Yeah. But anyway, go ahead.
Yes. There is no indicator either from public polling, financial, you know, reports, or observations from ground campaigning. It doesn't seem to be that Cuomo is in a serious concern about what is happening. He's a very smart tactician. He has a solid group of campaign operatives working for him, sometimes a little bit too zealous by sending out, you know, interns to go protest Zephyr Teach Out somewhere. But he seems to have managed to put together, you know, a progressive enough coalition that also doesn't neglect that there are more moderate or conservative voters outside of New York that he has to appeal to. And that's a position that Kathy Hochul, his pick for lieutenant governor, really seems to fill the void. So every indicator that a reporter would look at, you know, polling, financial resources, observations from on the ground, don't seem to indicate that he is a real threat. But again, things could change later on. But so far, he seems to be in a safe position.
Ozzie Paber from Capital New York. And before you go, I see that you covered the Al Sharpton-led march on Staten Island over the weekend. It was peaceful. Sharpton said beforehand that violence would not be tolerated. Now, Eric Garner's death happened before Michael Brown's, but did the specter of Ferguson, Missouri, hang over Staten Island, New York on Saturday?
Absolutely, in part because they drew connections to that incident. They said both were victims of over-aggressive policing. Sharpton, who's a key figure, developing to be a key figure in Ferguson and giving the eulogy there, was also speaking out about Eric Garner. One thing that is kind of fascinating was that when Sharpton first announced this march on Staten Island, it was politically a very big headache for City Hall and potentially very fraught. There was the round table where he made that comment about the mayor's son that drew a lot of criticism. And then Ferguson really erupted. There was violence. There was a mishandling by the local police. And what happened was that the march on Staten Island turned out to be an opportunity for City Hall and for Sharpton to show how different they were. That there would not be violence, that there would be coordination. So everyone in New York stood in some way to benefit by having a peaceful demonstration. Somewhat, there could have been some better coordination at certain points of the march, but what had happened was that it gave New Yorkers, it gave Mayor Bill de Blasio, it gave Al Sharpton an opportunity to stand a little bit taller and say, we're not like those other places that have violent clashes that we're all too familiar with.
So the protesters made their point about the death during arrest of Eric Garner peacefully. Indeed, sure. Did I read there were zero arrests?
Yes, there was the top police official on Staten Island spoke to reporters immediately after the event, and he said there were no incidents, no arrests, nobody got hurt, and he said we couldn't ask for a better day.
And now the Staten Island DA has announced that he's impaneling a grand jury to consider indicting one or more of the police officers involved. Is that what the protesters were calling for? Was it that specific?
They had initially called, well, a bunch of different protesters had called for different things. First, it was a federal investigation and to stop the DA from going forward because they didn't believe he could be independent. Then when that seemed to be not happening, they've drawn the line by saying they will not be satisfied. And Congressman Hakeem Jeffries of Brooklyn and others said they will not be satisfied until there is an indictment, a trial, a conviction, and people sent upstate on criminal charges. So at least there's been some declaration of how far they want to take this. The other question to watch is who? Will they be satisfied if only Daniel Pantaleo, the person who put the arm around Eric Garner, is tried and convicted or put through the legal system? Or will they also require the other officers on the scene, plus the medical emergency workers who arrive later, will they also face criminal charges? That's going to be a fascinating question for this coalition and how far they're going to push this.
So we will see what happens with that grand jury on Staten Island. We thank Ozzie Pabura, politics reporter for Capital New York. Ozzie, thanks. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks for having me.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. And coming up next, should Congress authorize military action in Syria, not just Iraq, because of ISIS? Stay tuned.